So today we're doing we're actually finishing off from the Mahabharata series. Today's topic is Krishna's role in the Mahabharata. So I had free range to choose any verse from any scripture. So I chose this one. It's from the third canto. It's a verse that, well, it's got the word Bharatam in it. It's the purport, and the verse translation is all about the Mahabharata and also the Vedanta Sutra and Srimad Bhagavatam. Translation and purport by Swamigrish Srila Prabhupada. Your friend, the great sage Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas, has already described the transcendental qualities of the Lord in his great work, the Mahabharata. But the whole idea is to draw the attention of the mass of people to Krishna Katha, Bhagavad Gita, through their strong affinity for hearing mundane topics. So please repeat. The great sage Krishna Dvapayana Vyas is the author of all Vedic literature, of which his works, Vedanta Sutra, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Mahabharata, are very popular readings. As stated in Bhagavatam 1.4.25, Srila Vyasadeva compiled the Mahabharata for the less intelligent class of men, who take more interest in mundane topics than in philosophy of life. The Vedanta Sutra was compiled for persons already above the mundane topics, who might already have tasted the bitterness of the so-called happiness of mundane affairs. The first aphorism of Vedanta Sutra is Atato Brahma Jigyasa, i.e., only when one is finished the business of mundane inquiries in the marketplace of sense gratification can one make relevant inquiries regarding Brahman, the transcendence. Those persons who are busy with mundane inquiries, which fill the newspapers and other such literatures, are classified as Stri Shudra Dvijabandhus, or women, the labourer class, and unworthy sons of the higher classes, Brahmana, Kshatriya, and Vaishya. Such less intelligent men cannot understand the purpose of Vedanta Sutra, although they make a show of studying the sutras in a perverted way. The real purpose of Vedanta Sutra is explained by the author himself in Srimad Bhagavatam, and anyone trying to understand Vedanta Sutra without reference to Srimad Bhagavatam is certainly misguided. Such misguided persons who are interested in the mundane affairs of philanthropic and altruistic work under the misconception of the body as the self, could better take advantage of the Mahabharata, which was specifically compiled by Srila Vyasadeva for their benefit. The great author has compiled the Mahabharata in such a way that the less intelligent class of men, who are more interested in mundane topics, may read the Mahabharata with great relish, and in the course of such mundane happiness, can also take advantage of Bhagavad Gita, the preliminary study of Srimad Bhagavatam or the Vedanta Sutra. Srila Vyasadeva had no interest in writing a history of mundane activities other than to give less intelligent persons a chance for transcendental realization through Bhagavad Gita. Vidura's reference to the Mahabharata indicates that he had heard the Mahabharata from Vyasadeva, his real father, while he was away from home and was touring the places of pilgrimage. Munir vivakshur bhagavat gunanam sakapite bharatam mahakrishnah yasmin rinang gramya sukanuvadayar matir grihitanu hare katayam. Your friend, the great sage, Krishna Dvapayana Vyas, has already described the transcendental qualities of the Lord in his great work, the Mahabharata. But the whole idea is to draw the attention of the mass of people to Krishna Katha, Bhagavad Gita, through their strong affinity for hearing mundane topics. Om Agyana Timarandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshurumilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Vanshakalpa Trubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasari Gaur Bhaktivarinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, I'm grateful for the opportunity to say something today. There's been some very nice classes on Mahabharata by very qualified speakers who can speak for hours on Mahabharata and all scriptures. So, It's a hard act to follow, so I'm not so well versed on the Mahabharata, but I've got half an hour, might manage it, hopefully. So this verse, I mean, it's an interesting verse from the point of view. It gives the two aspects of the Mahabharata. There's a transcendental aspect, and then there's a mundane aspect. If you look at the third line, the mundane aspect's given in the third line with the term gramya sukha anuvada. So anuvad means to speak. And gramya sukha, well, we know this word gramya kata means village talk. So gramya sukha means mundane talk. So the Mahabharata is full of mundane talk. It's philanthropy, politics, economics. It's all there in the Mahabharata. And it will attract people who have that taste. But then the Mahabharata has another aspect, the transcendental aspect. And that is given in the fourth line with the term Harech Katayam, which means Hare Kata, Krishna Kata. So Krishna Kata is all purifying. Therefore the Mahabharata is purifying. And what is the most transcendental part of the Mahabharata? But, yes, who said Bhagavad Gita? Yes, of course. I thought it was someone else. Bhagavad Gita. So the whole purpose of the Mahabharata is to bring us to Bhagavad Gita. So it's like a preaching strategy. We use it today. We call it bridge preaching, right? And bridge preaching, well, you can have a different several angles on it. Some devotees are disgusted by it, right? Other devotees are like, don't be so narrow-minded. Our job is to bring people to Krishna. So we have to do whatever's necessary. So bridge preaching is not a new thing. The Mahabharata, bridge preaching. The Vedas are bridge preaching. Karmakand and Jnanakand. What are these? You know, we're only interested in Bhaktikand. Srila Prabhupada uses this term, Bhaktikand. So why we even bother with Karmakand and Jnanakand? Why we bother with the Vedas? Why we bother with the Mahabharata? Point is, we have to bring people. In Maratam Das Thakur, he says, Karmakand, Jnanakand, Kevala, Vishera, Banda, they're pots of poison. So we see the Acharyas, they have a, just like we today, some people criticize bridge preaching and some people glorify it. It's always been going on. Srila Vyasadeva, he criticizes it. Now he's the author. You know, it's Kripayam Munina Kritam. He's the author of the Mahabharata. Iti Bharatamakyanam Kripaya Munina Kritam. The Muni, this verse is a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Muni refers to Srila Vyasadeva. So by mercy, Kripaya Munina Kritam, he has compiled the Mahabharata. But he himself, well actually he's criticized by Narad Muni for compiling the Mahabharata. Why? Because Naishkarmyam apyachyuta bhavavarjitam nashobati jnanam alam niranjana kutapuna shashvadabhadramishvari nacharpitam yat karma apyakaranam. Narad Muni says, you have written, now he's, at this point, when Narad Muni is speaking to Srila Vyasadeva, Srila Vyasadeva has written all the Vedic literature except for the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Narad Muni says, you have written literature which is, it is nice karma. It is free from fruit of activity. It will take you beyond the cycle of birth and death. It will stop the cycle of karma. And you have given Shashvarabhadramishvari Nacharpitam Karma Yatapyakaranam. The karma, or fruit of activity, which is, it is temporary. You've given these two things in Vedic literature. That is why you're despondent. But he says, Na Shobati, which means it is not good. Why? Achyuta Bhavavarjitam. That is insufficient description of Krishna. So actually the Mahabharata is criticized. Insufficient description of Krishna. And that is why, as devotees of Krishna, we spend our time studying the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Mahabharata is somewhat subsidiary, even though it's a great literature. It's great because it brings people who are mundane into the Bhagavad Gita. But at the same time, as devotees, once we've understood the purpose is simply pure devotional service, then Dharma Prajita Kait Devotra, as the Srimad Bhagavatam begins, we throw it all out. So we see the Mahabharata is the bridge preaching. In the Garuda Purana, there's a statement, Arta Yam Brahmasutranam, Bharatartha Vinirnayaha, Gayatri Basyas Rupo So, Vidarta Paribrimita. There's four things that the Srimad Bhagavatam is giving. It is Arta Yam Brahmasutranam, it is the Vedanta Sutra, the meaning of the Vedanta Sutra. Bharatartha Vinirnaya, the essence of the Mahabharata. There's Gayatri Basya Rupo So, the commentary of the Gayatri. And Vedarta Paribrimita is an expansion of the Vedas. So it's a glorious literature, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and because it contains everything, then the Mahabharata, the Vedanta Sutra, and the Vedas, they're all somewhat subsidiary for us, and we don't spend too much time on them. But having said that, when Srila Rupa Goswami, he compiled the Nectar of Devotion, a lot of Mahabharata pastimes he included. Why? Because it's full of rasa. And also the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is full of rasa. Pibata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam. It's full of rasa. And the Srimad Bhagavatam contains many pastimes from the Mahabharata. Like the first canto, there's the son of Drona punished. There's Krishna enters Dwarka. We have the 11th canto, the Maushala Lila, the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. What else do we have? 10th canto, there's a lot of Mahabharata pastimes. Why? Because it's full of rasa. So we should be, in our study of Mahabharata, we're not interested in the mundane aspect. We should be like the bee. Said that the Vaishnava is like the bee who takes pollen, takes honey from all the different flowers. So we should be expert at going through the scriptures and taking the essence. This is called Saragrahi. Saragrahi Vaishnav. The Vaishnav is the essence seeker and can take the rasa, take the best from everything. So Srila Rupa Goswami, he's taken the best from the Mahabharata and he has explained rasa not only through Mahabharata but through Srimad Bhagavatam, through Padma Purana, through Harivansha. Harivansha is the commentary of or the supplement to the Mahabharata. Actually, you know there are several Mahabharatas. Sanatana Goswami, in his Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he explains how the son of Pariksit Maharaj, Janmijaya, he heard the Mahabharata from Vaishampayana. And then he heard the Mahabharata again from Jaimini Rishi, but they weren't the same Mahabharata. He preferred Jaimini Rishi's Mahabharata because it gave the pure devotional conclusion. It put Krishna in the center as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whereas Vaishampayana's Mahabharata, Krishna is subsidiary. So what is the role of Krishna in the Mahabharata? From the point of view of Krishna, the actor, he's an actor, you know. Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he's an actor who plays a role in the Mahabharata. So what is his role? It's subsidiary in the Mahabharata that we have. That was spoken by Vaishampayana. So he's, the Pandavas, they take center stage. Krishna is the well-wisher of the Pandavas. I mean, what does Krishna do? He's protecting the Pandavas at every step. He's the well-wisher. He cannot give up the association of the Pandavas. He loves the Pandavas. He's also impartial. He's not envious of Dhritarashtra. He's not envious of Duryodhana. In fact, when he goes as the messenger, the peace messenger, he presents the case for peace and he just lets Duryodhana make his own decision, and according to his decision he will get his karma. Krishna has two things. In the Mahabharata we see two aspects of Krishna. We see the impartial Krishna and we see the partial Krishna. You know, Bhagavad Gita, it's Samoham Sarvabhuteshu Nami Dveshu Stina Priya Yebu Janti Tumambhakcha Mai Te Teshu Chapyaham. Krishna says, I am equal to everyone. I do not envy anyone. I do not favor anyone. However, Yebajanti Tumambhakcha Mai Te Teshu Chapyaham. If you engage in devotional service, then you become my friend and I become your friend. So we see with the Pandavas, this is what's going on. But other than that, he's impartial, giving karma. So I was mentioning Sanatana Goswami. He's explaining that there are two Mahabharatas. So the Mahabharata we have, it has a mundane aspect, more so than Jaimini's Mahabharata. Now, I said that Harivansha is the supplement to the Mahabharata, but the supplement to Jaimini's Mahabharata is the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So that's been very nicely presented by Srila Sanatan Goswami. So, if we consider the mundane aspect, now there's an interesting connection with this. There's an interesting pastime in the Madhya Lila. While Mahaprabhu is instructing Sanatan Goswami, he gave a description of the Mahabharata and he explained to Sanatan Goswami that there are illusory stories in the Mahabharata. And he then explained those stories according to the correct understanding. Kaviraj Goswami uses the term Su Siddhanta. What is the real understanding of the Mahabharata? You see, we can get the misunderstanding, we can get the real understanding. So Mahaprabhu, he gives four examples of illusory stories in the Mahabharata. Does anyone know a story in the Mahabharata which is illusory? By illusory we mean it is not a spiritual pastime, it's a material pastime, and it's not eternal. Anyone know? Very good answer. Leaving the material world. Yes, it's called Krishna Antardhana, the departure of Krishna. So it appears that Krishna got shot in the foot by a hunter, Jara, and he died, and he even left the body. So this is an illusory story. Any other ones? Pardon? Gambling match. It wasn't the one mentioned. I mean, it could be. There could be aspects to it. Okay, just before Krishna leave the planet, what happened? It's discussed in the 11th canto. Yes, destruction of the Yadu dynasty. That is, it's called Maushila Lila, and that's illusory. Also, another example is referred to as Kejavatar. In the Mahabharata, there's a description how from Narayan, he plucked two hairs, a white hair and a black hair. From the white hair, Balaram incarnated, and from the black hair, Krishna incarnated. That's an illusory story. It has a higher, there's a deeper meaning. It's not what you think it is. Another example, Mahishi Harana. The queens, Krishna's queens were stolen. This is an illusory story. So, this is the mundane aspect. But as I mentioned, as Vaishnavas, we're Saragrahi. We take the transcendental aspect. So, but as preparation, I thought I would study the Nectar of Devotion. Because the Nectar of Devotion contains a lot of examples of the devotional conclusion and the science of rasa as given in the Mahabharata. So there are many examples. For example, if we take Krishna's qualities, so there are 64 qualities mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion. And as Rupa Goswami does throughout the Nectar of Devotion, as he's given his science of devotional service, he pulls examples from various scriptures. I mentioned the most common scripture is Srimad Bhagavatam. There are probably over 100 verses, maybe 200 quotes from Srimad Bhagavatam that demonstrate devotional or nectar of devotion, bhakti rasa. So when Rupa Goswami is describing the qualities of Krishna, he gives some examples. For example, Krishna's self-satisfied, Atmarama. So he gives the example of when Bhima killed Jarasandha. So naturally the credit goes to Krishna. You know, Bhima was fighting Jarasandha and neither of them could gain the advantage over the other. And Bhima's getting very tired. What to do? What does Krishna do? What does he do? Okay, we got a sign. We got two signs here. We're doing sign language. So he picks up a piece of grass and he splits it in two. And there's a Jara. Jarasandha, the term Jarasandha means joined together by Jara. He was born in two parts and a witch called Jara joined him together. So he had a weak point. So Bhima took the legs, Jarasandha, and ripped him apart. So the credit goes to Krishna. But he was happy that Bhima took the credit. Why? Because he's self-satisfied. Another example is Krishna's determined, Sudrida Vrata. So the example is given of Draupadi. When Draupadi was in danger, Krishna was able to help. Because Sudrida Vrata, he can do what he says he's going to do. He's promised, Nami Bhakta Pranashati, my devotee will never perish. So how can he protect Draupadi? He's in Dwarka. Draupadi's in, Hastinapur. So how can he protect Draupadi? But he's all powerful. Therefore, he can maintain his vow. So he has this quality of determination. This is one of his glories. In the same connection, there's another quality of Krishna is that he is sarvagya. So what does that mean? He knows everything, exactly. So there's a wonderful pastime in the Mahabharata. Actually, the background is as follows, that when the Pandavas were going into exile, Yudhisthira, he wanted to serve the rishis and the ascetics who loved him and who wanted to go in the forest and live with the Pandavas. But he had no facility. So he asked Daumya Rishi, what to do about this? I want to provide. I want to be able to feed the ascetics. I want to be able to feed the rishis. So Daumya Rishi, he said, then you should worship the sun god. The sun god provides. You know, the sun god provides rain. He evaporates the water, forms clouds, provides rain. And through rain and sun, all the vegetation grows, all the food is available. So you worship the sun god. So what Yudhisthira Maharaj did was, for several days, he fasted, and he was standing in the Ganga, and he was offering prayers to the sun god. So the sun god was very pleased. So then he provided a copper plate. It's called the Akshay Patra. This is a special plate. Whatever food you took from this plate, it would produce more and more food, unlimitedly. Until Draupadi ate from that. When Draupadi took her meal, the plate would not provide any more food. So he went into exile, and they were feeding hundreds, thousands of rishis, as desired. Now, on one occasion, Duryodhana, he received Durvasa Muni very nicely. As we know, Durvasa Muni, he can get very angry. So Duryodhana took special care to serve Durvasa Muni. And Durvasa Muni was pleased, and he offered a boon to Duryodhana. So the evil-minded Duryodhana, he decided that he would get the Pandavas into trouble. So he said to Durvasa Muni, you go and visit the Pandavas after they have eaten. They will receive you very nicely. So what happened? Durvasa arrives with 10,000 disciples. And then what to do? Draupadi had already eaten. The plate was not going to give any more food, so it's a dilemma. So at this point, the Durvasa Muni and his disciples, they go and take bath, and they're ready for a slap-up feast. And then Draupadi's panicking what to do. So Krishna, he's sarvagya. He's omniscient. He knows everything. So just at that point, he arrives. And what does he do? He looks at the pots, and he sees a little bit of vegetable, pops it in his mouth, and he's satisfied. Yasmin tushti jagat tushtam. When Krishna's satisfied, the whole world is satisfied. This is explained in the fourth canto. Yatataror mula nasichanina tripyanti tatskanda bujo pasaka. Pano paharach jayatendriyanam sarva... was it? Sarvarhanam achuteja. Tataiva sarvarhanam achuteja. Shishirada gokulandaki jai. Now that's Narad Muni. He's speaking to the Prachetas, and he says that if we water the root of the tree, then the whole tree becomes nourished. And if we provide food to the stomach, then all the senses and limbs are satisfied. So in the same way, we simply worship Krishna, and everyone's satisfied. So just by Krishna taking this bit of vegetable, he became satisfied, and all the sages, all the disciples of Durvasa Muni, they all became satisfied. Then they became worried. Because Durvasa Muni, he knew the power of devotees. Why? Because he had already experienced, he tried to chastise Ambarish Maharaj, and in the Surasan Chakra, had chased him around the universe. So he became fearful. We don't want to go back to visit the Pandavas, because we're not going to be able to eat anything. So they disappeared. And that way, Pandavas were out of trouble. So these are some of the qualities. So Sarvagya, another quality of Krishna. Another one is gratitude. Krishna's grateful. Kritagya. Now the example given is that Draupadi, just by chanting, Hey Govinda, then Lord Krishna became indebted. And that indebtedness increased. He felt more and more indebted to Draupadi. So in this connection, Srila Prabhupada says, if we just say, hey Krishna, hey Govinda, then Krishna becomes indebted. So let's try it. Hey Krishna!
Hey Krishna!
Hey Govinda!
Hey Govinda!
So now Krishna owes. So think how much, if we chant Hare Krishna our entire life, Krishna will be indebted. So these are some of the qualities of Krishna. They're described in the Mahabharata. Well, actually, they're there if we can see. We have to have the eyes to see. Now let's look at a different angle. The different rasas. There's a chapter of Nectar Devotion on Sakya Ras. And in that chapter, it's mentioned how the Pandavas, they have this relationship with Krishna. Sakya Ras, which means friendship. Friendship means what? It means intimacy. Intimacy means what? It means Krishna's controlled. So there's one characteristic of devotional service called Sri Krishna Akarshani. That means Krishna is controlled by bhakti. It's actually only, this aspect is only present in Prema Bhakti. It's not there in Bhava Bhakti, and it's not there in Sadhana Bhakti. But if we attain the platform of Prema, then Krishna is controlled. So the example Rupa Goswami gives is the Pandavas, how Krishna was always controlled by the Pandavas. And he helped them in so many ways. We had the pastime of how he helped Draupadi, how he helped Arjuna. Arjuna was not the strongest warrior. Bhishma was stronger. Karna was stronger. Drona, they could have defeated. But Arjuna, Krishna is Naran, Narayan, Rishi. Krishna's, because Arjuna has that relationship, special relationship with Krishna, he was invincible. Like this. And when Krishna went to try and convince, he tried the nice way to convince Duryodhana to stop the fight, to not have a war. And when the nice talk didn't work, he said, the Pandavas, they treat Dhritarashtra as worshipable elder. All we're asking is 5 villages, 1 for each Pandava. But still, he said, I will not give them enough land to drive a pin. You know, that's Duryodhana, very arrogant. So when the nice talk stopped, Krishna said, hard talking, he said, you will never defeat Bhima when he's angry. How can you defeat Arjuna and Krishna? They're Naranarayan. He gave a warning. And actually, practically, everyone agreed with Krishna. Dushasana, he agreed with Krishna. Dhritarashtra agreed, Gandhari agreed, Bhishma agreed, Drona agreed. Duryodhana did not agree. Some of Duryodhana's brothers agreed, but Duryodhana did not agree, Karna did not agree, and then they had a plot. They decided, we will arrest Krishna. Such folly. So, as they were discussing in the assembly, it was too much for Duryodhana, and he couldn't take it anymore. So he made a sign, and then all these soldiers rushed into the assembly hall with swords, ready to arrest Krishna. And what did he do? He displayed his universal form. See, how foolish. So Krishna, it's in the Mahabharata, it said he's an ordinary person. In the Srimad Bhagavatam it said, Kritavan kila karmani saharamena kejava atimarchani bhagavan guda kapata manushaha. That Krishna and Balaram, they appeared in disguise, guda kapata manusha, which means they're just like ordinary human beings. But actually, Ati Marchani Bhagavan, they perform superhuman feats. So in the Mahabharata, we see Krishna, he's ordinary in some sense, but then at times he shows his godhood. He shows his omniscience. He shows his universal form. So the devotees, it's simple to understand who is the actual hero of Mahabharata. It's Krishna. And although he appears to have a subsidiary role, in actuality, Krishna is the center, as is mentioned here in this purport. The purpose of Mahabharata is to bring people to Bhagavad Gita, to surrender to Krishna. So we see how Krishna, as the messenger, he reveals the universal form. So we're discussing Sakyaras. So actually it's mentioned that of all the devotees outside of Vrindavan, the best Sakha is who? Arjuna, yes. Therefore, there's little description of Arjuna's form and Arjuna's love for Krishna. Actually, it's explained that Arjuna had a similar bodily features to Krishna. Therefore, that was it naturally led to a deep relationship of friendship. So, friendship, and in the case of Kunti, the relationship is Vatsalya Ras. She's protective of Krishna. Now, in the pastime where Shishupal was blaspheming, actually, was he blaspheming? In a sense he was, but in another sense he wasn't. It was counted as Namabhas. He got liberation from this, so it's not really a blasphemy. But anyway, when Shishupal was criticizing Krishna, then the Pandavas, they were burning with anger. So this is described in the Nectar of Devotion, how anger is a secondary rasa. So at that point, the anger becomes prominent and the sakya ras becomes secondary. It's described in it's actually in the northern division. The Nectar of Devotion is divided into four divisions. It begins with the eastern division, then the southern, then the western, then the northern. In the northern division, the secondary rasas are described. And there's also a description of how when there are many rasas together, sometimes the secondary rasa becomes prominent. It becomes the angi, the body. The primary rasa becomes the anga. So when anger becomes prominent, you know, sakya rasa is there, but anger is prominent, but it's not a contradiction. So in that anger, it's described how the Pandavas, they were exhibiting various symptoms. One example, now there's a chapter called the sattvika bhavs. This is, we're now in the southern division of the Nectar Devotion. The sattvika bhavs, the anubhavs, the vibhavs, the vyabhichari bhavs, and the stai bhav. There's five chapters. So sattvika bhav, Prabhupada describes that as existential ecstasy. It's the life airs become disturbed. There are eight of them. I always ask, every time I give class, if I talk about this topic, I always ask, what are the eight? So far, no one's managed to give me, the audience has never managed to give all eight. Actually, I can't give all eight either. Does anyone know any of them? No, the life here is disturbed by these eight. Or these eight are symptoms. Okay, we'll give you some. Perspiration is one, yes. Sveda. No, that's not one of them. There's only eight of them. Yes, hair standing on end. And then, no, that's not, foam's not one of them. Tears, yes. So in the Gurvastika, there's three mentioned. Romancha, Kampa, Shru, Taranga, Bajo. Romancha, hair standing on end. Kampa, shaking. And Ashru. Another one, Stamba, stunned. You know, when Ashvatthama hurled his Brahmastra, Arjuna became stunned in ecstasy. This is sattvika bhav. When Krishna showed the universal form to Arjuna, his hairs stood on end. This is sattvika bhav. We were talking about Shishupal. So when Shishupal was criticizing Krishna, Bhima, he was crying with anger. That's sattvika bhav. And Sahadev, he was shaking with anger. That's sattvika bhav. Now, there's another type of mention. I mentioned vyabhichari bhav. So in the science of rasa, the stai bhav is like the ocean. It's the permanent rasa. And then the waves on the ocean, they're called the vyabhichari bhavs. And one of there's 33 of them, I think, or 31. One of them is called Aurgriya. It's like the word ugra. And it means violence. One can be violent in ecstasy. So Sahadev, he experienced this vyabhichari bhav when Shishupal was blaspheming Krishna. He said, I will kick on his head with my left foot. Sahadev is thinking this. So he's full of anger, he's shaking, sattvika bhav, and then this vyabhichari bhav, like a little wave that augments the rasa, he's going to get violent and he's going to kick on Shishupal's head. These are some examples. So we see all the... Let's go back to the Ashtasattvika bhavs. We missed a few. One is Vaivarnya. That is, one becomes pale. And Pralaya. Yeah. Is that one of them? I can't remember. May well have been. Goosebumps, which is hair standing on end, yes. Laughing. Laughing is an anubhav. It's like, this is verse, Ivamvratas Svapriyanama Kitja Jitanuraga Chita Uta Chitaya A sajato rodity rowdy gayachun madavan richity lokabacha. Very sadfugabav, anubavs are given. This is the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Like dancing, bacha. Bacha. Was it anu, lok, anu, was it bayar, everything? Un madavan richity lokabayaha. To be indifferent to the public. This is one of the fyabachari bavs. And dancing, this is anubav. Laughing is anubhav. Gaiety, singing is anubhav. So that's something else. There are so many different features, but they're all there. So we're discussing this. So the point I was making is, when we read the Mahabharata, what do we read? Are we into the mundane aspect? We want the politics, the economics. It's a good plot as well, isn't it? The Mahabharata's got such a wonderful plot. There's all this, I was mentioning how Krishna is partial to the devotees, how he's protecting Arjuna. So there's wonderful, some of the plots that took place. We have the example of the killing of Jayadratha. There's an example, actually this is an example of is it Bhakta Surit? Krishna is partial to his devotee. Actually there's several examples. One is Bhishma. When Bhishma was when Bhishma was fighting in the battle, Krishna, he made a promise, I will not use weapons. Now, why did he make this promise? It's given in the Nectar of Devotion. The reason is because he loved Bhishma so much. Krishna loved Bhishma so much that he could not bring himself to use weapons against Bhishma. This is Bhakta Surit. He's favorable to his devotees. Another example of one of Krishna's qualities is compassion, or his great mercy. So when Bhishma was lying on the bed of arrows, he went into ecstasy, Bhishma, when he saw Krishna. Now the reason for that, we were talking about the different types of the sattvika bhav, the anubhav and so forth. One of them is called vibhav, which means the cause of love. And one aspect of that is udipana, which means the stimulus. So what is Bhishma's relationship? It is dasyaras. So what causes dasyaras to manifest? What is the stimulus? One of the stimuli is mercy. When someone is in dasyaras, when they contemplate the great mercy of the Lord, they go into ecstasy. So Bhishma is this example. Because he was thinking, I was trying to kill Krishna, and now, at the time of my death, I want him to appear before me, and he has given me this great mercy. He's appeared before me. And that put him in ecstasy. And also, in connection with this pastime, this demonstrates another aspect of Krishna, karuna, compassion. He had so much compassion for Bhishma. And in the Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada explains, devotees, they're not worshipping Krishna, they're worshipping Krishna's compassionate nature. So this pastime, it's like Krishna, he actually said that Krishna forgot who he was. Out of compassion for Bhishma, he forgot who he was. We went off track. Let's go back to Jayadratha. I'll just tell this lovely pastime. So the beginning of the pastime is as follows. The background is Abhimanyu. He had special knowledge of how to break what's known as the Chakravyuha, the circle formation. So in the Battle of Kurukshetra, each day the warriors would line up in various formations, various tactics. It's like chess, how to defeat the opposition. So, of course, Krishna knew how to break the Chakravyuha. Arjuna knew. And Abhimanyu, the son of Arjuna, also knew. Because when he was in the womb, he heard Arjuna talking about this. He was actually explaining to Subhadra the Chakravyuha and how to break it. So, apart from Krishna, Arjuna and Abhimanyu, the other warriors didn't know. So, one day of the battle, Dronacharya, he arranged the Kauravas in the Chakravyuha. And this was causing havoc. And Yudhisthira was freaking out, so to speak. He didn't know what to do. Pandava armies were being routed. Now, Arjuna knew how to break the chakra, but he was elsewhere fighting. So what to do? So he asked Abhimanyu. He's only 16 years old. He says to him, you can break this. And Abhimanyu said, he was in ecstasy. I want to do service. But he said, there's a problem. I know how to break in, but I have not learned how to break out. So if the chakra closes in on me, I'm dead meat. So Yudhisthira, he says, don't worry, you break in, All of us will right behind you. We'll all break in with you, and then we'll fight our way out. Now, there's a background. I mentioned how the plot is so exciting, the Mahabharata plot. So at this point, let's divert to another story. Jayadratha, he worshipped Lord Shiva, and he wanted a boon. He could kill the Pandavas. Lord Shiva said, I cannot give you this boon, but I will give you the boon that you can check. You can check each of the Pandavas in battle, with the exception of Arjuna. So while they were fighting, Abhimanyu, he broke into the chakra of Yuha, and then Jayadratha was there, and he used his boon, and he stopped each of the Pandavas from breaking in, from joining, following Abhimanyu. So then the chakra closed. Abhimanyu was alone. What to do? It's a wonderful pastime. He's so brave. He fought all these Maharatis, seven of them ganged up on him. And finally, they defeated him through foul means. They broke the rules of Kshatriya fighting, because Abhimanyu was, he came off his chariot. He was fighting on the ground, and they were still on their chariots, and they killed Abhimanyu. So when Arjuna heard this, he made a vow, terrible vow. He said, tomorrow I will kill Jayadratha. And if I fail, I will enter the fire. So the next day, the whole Kaurava tactic was to keep Jayadratha alive, because they understood if we can get Arjuna to break his vow, he will enter the fire, then practically speaking, we've won the war. So as they were fighting, the whole day, actually Dronacharya, he made a sophisticated arrangement that is called the needle formation. So all the warriors are lined up in like a needle, one after the other. And who's at the back? Jayadratha. They're all there to protect Jayadratha. So in order to get to Jayadratha, Arjuna would have to defeat all the other warriors in standing before, in between him and Jayadratha. And also there was a lotus vyuha to protect the needle. Then there was a cart vyuha to suck in warriors who were foolish enough to attack and to capture them. And then there was a semicircle was arranged of Kauravas who would not retreat under any circumstance. They were just there like pillars to provide firepower. So this is what was Arjuna was up against. So as he's fighting, then, you know, the clock's ticking, the sun's going down, and he's accomplished so much, but there's still all these great warriors like Drona, Duryodhana, Karna, they're all still between Arjuna and Jayadratha. What to do? It's getting late. He's not going to manage it. So that's the point when Krishna used his potency. He displayed his godhood. He took his Surasan chakra and he created an illusion that the sun had set. So in the Kauravas, Jai! Arjuna is going to enter the fire, and they're celebrating. Just at that point, Krishna says to Arjuna, put the arrow on your bow. Actually, he told him, I want you to fire the arrow, cut off Jayadratha's head, and make it fly through the sky and land on the lap of his father. Because his father had a special boon. His father said, wanted the boon that whoever killed my son, whoever made my son's head fall on the ground, he will die. So what happened was, Krishna, he withdrew the illusion, the sun appears, the Kauravas are suddenly, what's going on here? Arjuna fires the arrow, off comes the head of Jayadratha, lands on the head, on the lap of the father of Jayadratha, drops on the ground, and therefore Jayadratha's father also died. It's a nice pastime. So these are pastimes. Anyway, so the plot's very nice. Now the Bhagavatam plot, it doesn't have the same degree of, well, maybe it does if we have the eyes to see, but it doesn't look as sophisticated. But we don't care because we're not in it for the plot. We're in it for the devotion. And we know Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam. It is for the Vaishnavas. The Srimad Bhagavatam. So we've run out of time. Hare Krishna. Thank you for your time. I could probably take a comment or question.